Welcome to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, here today with Dr. Amy Brown at the Office of Teacher Education from Tennessee Tech. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Jeremy. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself. We'll start there.
Well, obviously a native of Livingston, Tennessee, and was fortunate enough to play basketball in college at Louisiana Tech University. Then graduated, started my career in college basketball, was there 13 years as an assistant associate and head coach at Tennessee Tech, then transitioned into being a school administrator in Overton County at Rickman Elementary for 3 years, and then been back at Tennessee Tech in the director's role, assistant director and director's role for the last 12 years.
So a long roundabout path.
Absolutely.
To get into education.
Absolutely. To get into higher education.
Yes, which we do talk about. Now, you left out the championship that you're playing in the basketball,
yeah,
basketball game for a championship.
Hey, unfortunately, 1994, last second shot by North Carolina, earned a silver NCAA ring versus a gold NCAA ring. So, yeah, unfortunately, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, well, and that's a fun story for a whole nother podcast. I think there's a whole story there to talk about that journey and how we end up in education.
Absolutely,
it's a big deal. So along the way, you fell into education. So one of the questions that I make everybody answer is, who was your favorite teacher growing up? And it could have been Livingston, it could have been somewhere else, but...
You know, it's funny you would ask that because, you know, in all honesty, I had great teachers that I really enjoyed. But I think Miss Pat Austin in sixth grade was my favorite teacher. And it was because she said what she meant and she meant what she said. And you knew that, but you also knew that she cared. And so I would say that would have been my favorite teacher.
And was that, what school was that?
Livingston Elementary School at the time. It's currently Livingston Middle School.
Yes, which always ages.
Absolutely.
Any time we talk about that, because something has changed.
Absolutely.
Some school has a new name, something different.
Always changing.
Yes, and everybody wants to tell me about multiple favorite teachers, but I make everybody narrow it down to one.
Oh, okay. Well, there's my one.
Yes. Yeah, so there's your one. So getting around, so getting into education, how did you make that jump? I assume coaching is education.
It is.
In a form, but it's not traditional. It's not K-12 education. How did you get there?
My undergrad degree was in physical education with a math minor. And came to Tech, started coaching, got my master's in instructional leadership, then went on to get my EDS in curriculum instruction. And so I always had that. But coaching is unique in that there's no textbook. There's a playbook, but there's no textbook. And you're dealing with 19 to 22-year-old women, and you're wanting them to win a game. And that's difficult. It's very difficult. And so it is a kind of teaching. But after 13 years, it was ready. It was time for a change. I was ready to make that move. And I was fortunate enough to have the director of Overton County Schools come and just talk to me about being a principal, and kind of fell in my lap of just, hey, why would you consider this? So I did that for 3 years, and then was fortunate enough to have the dean of the College of Education at the time, Dr. Matt Smith, to say, hey, would you consider coming back and being part of the Office of Teacher Ed as assistant director? And I said, sure. And they said, well, we'll pay for your doctorate degree as part of that as well. So went on and pursued that higher education at Tennessee State. And then after the current director retired, I was fortunate enough to interview and get the director's job.
Mm-hmm. So I know, if we back up just a little bit, that you've got some education people in your family. So yeah. So did that play a part?
It did. It did. My dad was a chemistry teacher. And then later on, the principal at Livingston Academy that I was fortunate or unfortunate to have. I'm not sure which day you would ask that, the answer you would get from me, but it was. And then my sister is a current teacher at White County Middle School. So we have some education, even aunts and uncles that have chosen that profession and retired from that profession. So I think we're the two current family members in the profession.
And you see that a lot.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of teachers, a lot of educators in my family also. Mm-hmm. And you do see a lot of people following that passion, because you're in it. You get to, sometimes it can be difficult, but you get to see both sides. You get to see the perks the pros and the cons.
Yeah,
of having
I think
a teacher, educator, as a family member.
I think you do. You know, I remember growing up and dad being principal, and just conversation I would hear him having with parents or with teachers or just with the public and community, and it didn't really connect until I was an administrator at the elementary level, the pre-K 8 level, and then in higher ed. You know, I see a lot, and I see him in me and how. To react and how to provide feedback with different issues and different things.
Yeah. Do you miss those? Do you miss those K-12 kids?
I do.
K-8 kids primarily.
I do. I really miss them. I had Rittman was about 820 at the time I was there, and I do miss that. I do. Sometimes I feel like it's the same job, just with a different age group in the administrative role.
Mm-hmm. And we do still get a few opportunities to get out in the schools and to interact with the little ones. We say little ones, but,
yes,
you know, K-12 students.
Well, and that's the thing about this job, too. We're fortunate enough at Tennessee Tech to have partnerships with about 50-plus different districts across the state. And so that means we do get to travel and place our teacher candidates in those districts, in those schools. So we do travel and visit those when needed or just when we are out. Also, I get to see our teachers, our aspiring teachers in practice, you know, to see them in those classrooms. And so it is rewarding to visit and go back to the P-12 environment and get to see some of that.
Mm-hmm. So in your current role, director of the Office of Teacher Education, I'm sure acronyms, anytime we come across an acronym, and that's OTE in our world, mm-hmm. is what we use. Somebody has to slow down. Always, you got to slow down and explain that because our listeners are not as used to the acronyms as we are. But Office of Teacher Education, what do you do there? What does that unit consist of?
Well, I think our office—the one word that best describes us—is facilitators, because we not only facilitate. We kind of move backwards. We facilitate the admission to teacher ed and all of those requirements, which are approximately about 8 requirements for our students who are coming into their sophomore year, starting that junior year and getting to their higher division classes. So we coordinate that admission. We also coordinate their placements into their residency. We coordinate their Praxis ACT or their state mandated Praxis exams. We facilitate the tutoring for it. And then we basically are the bridge between the College of Education and the Department of Education and what they require, what Tennessee Tech requires, and we bridge that together for our teacher candidates to be prepared and to be ready to be recommended for license. And that's the last step in our process, is facilitating and recommending our teacher candidates for licensure.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds like a lot of steps.
It is.
For those, obviously we're in that world.
Absolutely.
And we see it every day. So for somebody who's just going through and they're just getting a degree,
mm-hmm.
taking 120 hours, getting their diploma and going on to work, it's not that simple in education. It's really, there's a whole lot of other steps. You still have to get your degree. You got to pass your classes. You got to get to that point. But then there's this whole other layer of hoops,
mm-hmm.
is the nice way to put it, of things that you have to jump through to get there. And so that's what you all help,
of
the things you help
and,
facilitate.
And that's what we facilitate. There is a teacher performance assessment that the state of Tennessee requires. It is a portfolio. It resembles the National Teachers I don't even know the National Teachers, not exam, but the National board certification. But our teachers, our aspiring teachers, must pass that to be recommended for licensure. So we also facilitate those seminars and those trainings after the faculty have introduced and taught the concepts. We facilitate the seminars to finish that requirement up.
But even back before that, there are things as simple as proving that you know how to do CPR.
Oh, absolutely.
There are even smaller things that seem, you know, that you forget about. You think, oh, well, that's just a hoop you got to jump through. But you want those teachers to have that skill set.
Yeah, before our aspiring teachers enter the classroom and when what we call one semester residency, they're required to do CPR, AED, and first aid training. They're required a second background check, one when they are admitted to teacher ed, one before they enter residency. They're required to obviously pass those Praxis exams to prove the content knowledge. to earn the B's or betters in course B or better in courses that require that. So we facilitate all of that. They're required professional liability insurance. We facilitate and make sure that they have that before they enter residency. So there are requirements, what we call benchmarks, that have to be in each step that have to be met before that candidate can continue through the process.
And all those things are vital. I saw a news story that there were two coaches, and it was down towards Nashville, two coaches, and they were out working with their softball players, and a construction worker had a heart attack, and just right there on the spot went out. It was the middle of the school day. There were students around, but they knew exactly what to do. They'd had the training. They had to use the AED, brought him back to life, and got him down the road. You know, and so those skills that your child in the classroom who has that medical emergency, those little things, you know, you don't think about from the outside view, but all those training pieces are helpful. I mean, we need that for the classroom.
Well, it's not only helpful in their resident clinical experience, it's also helpful when they become that first year, second year, and 30-year teacher to know those things and be aware of the trainings to assist when needed. And fortunately, not a lot of our teacher candidates that I know of have had to use those skills, but they have them in case they need them. So that's the reason that we require them. Obviously, there's a GPA requirement that the state requires that they must have before going into that residency semester. So we also monitor that to make sure our candidates have that GPA to be able to go forward.
And it's a lot of hoops.
Very much so.
Yeah, but very necessary.
Absolutely.
Yes. So those come from a lot of different places. Part of them come from the state. But we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more with Dr. Amy Brown from Tennessee Tech. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking to Dr. Amy Brown from Tennessee Tech University, Director of the Office of Teacher Education. So we were just talking about some of the things that are required of teachers. Seems like there's new things every year that we work around, we change, we adapt, we adopt all of these changes. So where do those changes come from? Just a little background that helps, because we don't make them all up, certainly.
I think that any educator has to be flexible at any level, but definitely even at the higher ed level, have to be very flexible, because we never know when the Department of Education is going to change something and give no grandfathering or grace period, that it's an immediate change. And how do we change on an immediate in the middle of the semester to accommodate what they're requiring? Does that mean program of study? Does it affect it? Does it affect the requirements? How do we monitor that? How do we incorporate the new requirements in? So it's adaptability, as you said, is very important with us, because the majority of the changes are led by the state.
Mm-hmm. Along the way. And the state, so there's a sequence there. So a lot of these changes, we follow the State Department of Education. Mm-hmm. They're really the practical arm of what we follow.
Right.
The State Board of Ed makes those policies.
And approves them.
And so then we back up one more level and we hit the legislative body.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you seen, and we'll talk through a few of these things, changes from the legislative body or discussion of changes impacting teachers and just teaching in general?
Well, in the past 12 years, definitely the residency model has changed. When I first started in this position, it was a residency one, residency two model, and that stayed in place until this past fall. That allowed our teacher candidates to begin their placement in October after taking coursework from August to October. And then from October to May, they stayed in their placement. So it gave them about a semester and a half of clinical experience. And thus the medical model, they call that residency. Due to federal financial aid guidelines, due to the demands of teachers and the high demand of teachers, that has changed. And again, this fall semester is our first one semester residency, which we're changing back. We're reverting it back to what would have been known during our education is student teaching. So that's a change that's coming. And then another change now is talking about how many observations the state is going to require of our candidates while they're in their residency. That has never been a rule or law or policy that they mandated a number, but they're looking at mandating a specific number that they have to have as a minimum, and then leaving the maximum up to the universities.
And I know that we've seen, because we have been doing this a long time, we've been working with teacher education many, many years now. We've seen changes in literacy. You know, we'll have a focus. So that's been one of the big recent, you know, all of the, everyone who has a child in a school knows that there's been a huge focus on literacy with the third grade retention laws and, you know, so many moving parts. What a lot of people don't realize is that we play a role in that. We have requirements. We have modules, we have training that we have to do now.
Absolutely. Our teacher candidates are in coursework and completing those types of requirements that the state mandates down in literacy, for instance, literacy requirements, before they get to that clinical experience. And if they do not have those requirements, then we can't recommend them for licensure. They must prove that within their licensure application that they have mastered that, or they have completed the modules or the training for that. So a lot of that comes through the chair of our departments and their faculty, and the faculty changing and modifying and revising and just basically creating new ways to meet the standards or literacy standards or whatever it may be. It may be social studies or math next that they really focus on, but literacy has been in the last couple of years definitely with the third grade retention law.
And it looks different, you know, at the university level. I mean, looking in, I think a lot of times that people think we just kind of make up things. We just kind of make up these courses. Well, this course sounds great and it's going to be fun. And, you know, I think sometimes that can be the perception looking in, but especially in our areas where we're preparing teachers, it is very heavily regulated in terms of what we teach, how we teach it, when we teach it, the amount of time that we do. And so a lot of that is dictated by the state, which originally a lot of times starts with legislators.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that if I had a wish that those legislators and state board or even the State Department would just reflect a lot and include opinions of those current teachers and professors at our level that are in the trenches daily and get their opinions of how it's going to affect students, P-12 students, as well as our college students and future teachers. How is that going to affect everyone that's going to be involved versus just passing a policy, a law, a rule, and then thinking after it's already been passed, how are we going to implement that? I wish that they would focus on getting those opinions and thinking about that instead of flying the plane as you're building it,
which we see sometimes, and
absolutely,
sometimes it's not that there's been some kind of nefarious plan. It's just that it's not as well thought through. I think a good example could be the computer science ed endorsement. I don't think anyone is in disagreement that all students should have some experience with coding in the K-12 system. I think that's a reasonable expectation, and so that law is in effect. But then by the time it trickled down, they realized we don't have enough teachers to teach every student in the state of Tennessee how to do coding.
Absolutely. And, you know, you think about that because that's a specific instance that's happened recently. But now when you say shortage of teachers, it's across the board in all concentrations. You know, typically probably 10 years ago when an elementary position was open, there may be 50 to 100 candidates in for one position. And now it's very challenging for these districts to get two or three applicants that are certified and already have that license to apply. We are really in a public school teacher shortage. And our goal in teacher ed is to help them and assist those districts any way we can. But it's gotten to the point that we're having to say, I'm sorry, we do not have anyone ready for this position. And that's including all the alternative licensure pathways, not just the typical undergrad traditional 4-year path.
And we see so many of those, and we'll talk through a couple of those different pathways because every year there are new ones.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, the state has we've adapted. The state is everyone has adapted and tried to make changes to help get teachers into the classroom quicker. That's a pattern that we see across the board. And still not enough. Lots of reasons.
That's true. We try to understand, you know, there's a shortage and districts in the state and state board are coming up with ideas of to get teachers certified quicker. But are we jeopardizing our question that we've got to balance out? Are we jeopardizing the quality of preparedness they have that directly results to our P-12 students? And so it's a balancing act. And so from a former principal's perspective, I understand it. But from the director of teacher ed, are our candidates prepared if they don't go through the path, the traditional path, or the alternative pathway and see it all the way through, are they prepared to teach the students in today's public schools?
Mm-hmm. So recruitment and retention, it's another one of my bullet points. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Dr. Amy Brown to talk a little bit about recruiting teachers. Welcome back to Local Matters. We were just talking through a few different topics, recruitment and retention. We know there's a shortage. We know there's a lot of reasons why there's a teacher shortage. So what are your thoughts on some of the ways that you all, that the Office of Teacher Ed specifically, College of Ed in general, Tennessee Tech University, what are some of the ways that you all are helping recruit teachers?
Well, College of Ed several years ago hired a full-time College of Ed recruiter, recruiting coordinator, who visits schools, who talks to the dual enrollment teachers in public schools, who goes to career fairs, job fairs, who meet with at the schools just to recruit for the College of Education. And keep in mind with the College of Education, it's just not for licensure, even though we're talking about the shortage of teachers. But there are so many pathways within the College of Education that is that's a non-licensure pathway, especially in exercise science with pre-occupational therapy, physical therapy, all of those, athletic training. But for the licensure part, one of the big things that the College of Ed started a few years ago was a career fair, just the College of Ed career fair. And we've been fortunate enough to have 50-plus districts to register each year from in-state and out-of-state, and from Kentucky, Georgia, Colorado,
Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and come and meet our teacher candidates. We bring them out of their placement for the day, and they get to meet them, perform a mock interview or a short interview with them if needed, and our candidates present their resume, you know, look them in the eye, and most of our candidates leave there, and they have interest from multiple districts of hiring them.
Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, in the past, it was more a case of those high need areas that you really saw a lot of pressure. If you were at that career fair and you were a secondary ed math major, you were getting multiple offers from multiple schools on the spot.
Absolutely.
But now,
With special stipends,
yes. And that was the
for signing bonuses.
One of the Texas districts that was here a few years ago, they were offering $7,000 or $10,000 to help you with a down payment on a house if you would move to Texas and be a teacher. And so that just shows you the level of competitiveness. Obviously our local school districts do really well at the career fair because there are a lot of local students and people who want to stay locally. But for those teachers that are open to move, I mean, there are lots of good competition, but I think locally and in the upper Cumberland, the state of Tennessee, we've done a lot more to pay better. And I think that's helped partly with retention and recruiting. But there's so many moving parts with the retention efforts.
Well, and like most states, you know, you have your larger cities and then you have your rural areas. So it gives our candidates, where do they wish to start their careers? Do they want to move back home and give back to their community immediately? Would they like to venture and experience something at a larger or smaller district to start their career and then move forward whatever what they want to do? So we give them those opportunities. One of the unique things that our office does is we allow our candidates to go back to the districts that we have partnerships with or go to those to do their clinical practice versus keeping them just in the Upper Cumberland. And we do that because if they do want to go back home, it saves them money on housing. It saves them money on meals potentially to go back and live at home that last semester and get their foot in the door in their home district versus staying here, then going back to their home district. So that's unique. I think we might be the only university in the state of Tennessee that allows that and has that many partnerships with districts across the state.
And I think from what I've seen, some universities, and again, if you're a Tennessee Tech College of Ed student, it's just what you see. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't seem like a big deal that we offer that with those 50 partnerships. But if you are at a different university, they may only offer 5 or 3 or 2.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that is talking about recruiting and retention. I think that is a big recruiting item. I think that is a selling point to our program and in it, having it as large as it is. Speaking of numbers, our spring, current spring numbers that will start residency in the spring is 139. That's down a little bit, but nothing compared to some other programs and their numbers. So we're holding steady, so to speak, in our numbers.
Yeah, we're almost always one of the largest education prep providers. I was going to say EPPs, but I try to be careful with the acronyms.
That's right.
Providers of teachers mm-hmm. in the state.
Yes,
we meet that
absolutely
pretty much annually. So speaking of the districts, so I know that, you know, it is a big deal for teachers. Some teachers really want to go back home and work in their own district. You know, they want to move home. They want to have that impact. Others will move and they mm-hmm. go to different districts. So, you know, we do a good job facilitating that. How do you do that? How do you facilitate with districts? What kind of conversations do you have? Cell phone numbers? You
know, well, they have my cell phone number. Uh-huh. Let me say it that way. No, our candidates are allowed to choose 2 primary districts. They're 2 priority, top priorities. 99% of the time, our office can get them in their first priority. And so we then communicate with the principals in those districts or the central office, depending on what the districts prefer us and how they prefer us contact them. And then we tell them the grade level, the number of educators that we have in that concentration, for instance, elementary education is kindergarten through fifth grade, and then they place them and tell us what schools and who the mentor is going to be in that school for their placement. So we have 2 placement coordinators in our office, so we also facilitate those placements in that residency, and that's how we start. So essentially, we work about a semester or a little more than over a semester ahead of where our candidates are in their program.
Mm-hmm. And that's primarily undergrad.
So that is.
I know mm-hmm. that when we start talking about different pathways. We had mentioned that. I've talked some with some of the previous guests. Kurt Dronbarger was here and Angie Knight from Putnam County School mm-hmm. System talked about those different pathways that are vital these days. So for listeners, mm-hmm. so let's say I'm not a typical traditional 19-year-old undergrad gonna go out to teach person. I work at TRW and I've been an engineer for 25 years. I always really wanted to teach math. So what does that look like for that person who wants to teach math after 25 years when they retire? And they call Tennessee Tech in the Office of Teacher Education.
So the Department of Ed allows 2 possible pathways with that type of scenario. And the first would be a post-baccalaureate, and so that would allow someone to start in a master's program or an EDS, depending on if they already have a master's, and also get their master's or EDS plus licensure. At the end of that last semester of that program, that would look like a typical 1-semester student teaching clinical experience. For the other pathway that the state allows and has approved is called job embedded, and that is that if they can prove content in your area, in your scenario, such as math, then that person can prove that content to the state. They can take the job immediately, that math position in the schools, and have 3 years to complete a master's or EDS program of study. And that will take the student teaching off of their plate because they're teaching every day. The teacher performance assessment has been taken off as a requirement for those job-embedded candidates at this point, and that's been a new state policy in the past, in the last 2 years that's happened.
Mm-hmm. And now when you say immediately, I joke, because mm-hmm. with a math teacher, so the semester is wrapping up now. Mm-hmm. So someone calls the office early next week. They could be teaching January when schools go back in January.
Absolutely.
And that's a reality.
Absolutely. If they have proven that content by that praxis exam that the state requires, then yes, they could start teaching in January.
Mm-hmm. So that shows you how the need for teachers.
Absolutely.
And where we are these days. So back to our undergrads. So mm-hmm. when they get into the classroom, so we've got this relationship with the districts. We know they have your cell phone and they call and they need these teachers and they need, you know, they have there's a lot of needs. Mm-hmm. It's a whole lot of back and forth. It's a good partnership between Tennessee Tech and the school districts. Once those students go into the district, into their classrooms, do we just send them? Tell them to check back in at the end of the semester? What does that look like from your office for
so
those
our,
student teachers?
Our
residents?
Office requires a certain number of observations by the university supervisors. Those supervisors are typically retired directors, central office personnel, teachers, administrators who have retired but just want something to do. So they are hired temporarily by the university to supervise our students in their placements through drop-in visits, through full lesson observations, through pre-conferences and post-conferences of those observations. Then our mentors, the teachers who are mentoring them throughout the semester, are required to do observations as well. That produces their grade. And then our office also, again, brings them back for the seminars for the teacher performance assessment licensure requirement. So we see them quite often throughout the semester that they're completing residency.
And it's an intense time.
Oh, it is. It's very intense.
It's a lot of work.
It's very much so.
So rewarding for mm-hmm. those students, you know, who've made it to that senior year. It's basically the culminating project. They get to spend all day, you know, being a teacher, learning to be a teacher, having those people with all the experience help guide them through that process. And it's a huge support to have all of those experts in the field walking through.
Oh, absolutely. We want that support in place for them and to guide them and to help them through their challenges or to see them through with their successes. You know, and just as coincidentally, today is the last day of residency for our graduates.
Yeah, and so we'll have them graduated and, mm-hmm. and moving along and ready.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, okay, we've reached the end of our time. So I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, here with Dr. Amy Brown from the Office of Teacher Ed at Tennessee Tech University. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.